Well, today is Palm Sunday, evidence. And it is the day that marks the beginning of Holy Week. And it also celebrates a momentous event that happened almost 2,000 years ago. So it was the first day of Passover, and the Roman governor Pontius Pilate was doing that day what he usually did on the first day of Passover. He was leading his imperial cavalry into Jerusalem as a mighty show of force, all the military regalia. And his intention was to intimidate the common people and to discourage them from even the tiniest little thought of an uprising. Well, on this particular first day of Passover, as Pontius Pilate and his men were entering Jerusalem from the west, another procession was entering Jerusalem from the east. And it was led by Jesus of Nazareth. And he was riding not on top of a mighty steed, but on the back of a humble young donkey. And he was surrounded by the peasants, smiling and laughing, we can imagine, and they were spreading cloaks and leafy branches on the road in front of him and shouting out, "Hosanna! Blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord." Jubilant. What an amazing contrast this would have been for the people in Jerusalem that day. On the one hand, on one side of the city, there's a procession aimed at fear and intimidation. And on the other is a procession just radiating love and hope and joy. The juxtaposition was significant, and it was exactly what Jesus intended. But also significant is what didn't happen that day, something that we tend to take for granted. Because what didn't happen that day, Jesus didn't marshal these throngs of people and go over to confront Pontius Pilate. He didn't interfere with the imperial procession. There were no battles or skirmishes. There was no violence. Jesus, as we know him, the Prince of Peace, in that particular occurrence, as well as throughout his life, and most notably at the end of his life, he chose to resist not evil. To not resist evil. And this is what he had told his disciples. He's quoted in Matthew chapter 5, verse 39, as saying, "But I say unto you, do not resist an evildoer." That could be a little bit perplexing to get our heads around. But we look at his example and we see that Jesus never went into battle with the Romans or the Jewish high priests, even though he very strongly opposed the domination system that he had put into place. And just to get a sense of how huge that was the system that oppressed women and children. It impoverished and exploited whole classes of people. And it reinforced an idea of racial supremacy and ethnocentrism. But Jesus, rather than going into battle and fighting it out, he just let the oppressors be. He just let them be. And instead, he focused his attention and his energy on his own purpose. He was focused on his own business rather than getting entangled in theirs. Had he gotten mired in a conflict with the other, it would have not only violated his principles, but it would have made everything worse. You know, in unity, we have a saying that what we resist, well, you know this, what we resist persists. And really what it's saying is that when we pour all of our energy and our attention into what we don't want, that it actually gets bigger. It actually grows. We find that the very thing that we wanted to dispose of now has even more power because we are giving it the power of our attention and our energy. And so when we say, resist not evil, it is in part out of that recognition that if you keep focusing on what you don't want, you have no time or energy left to focus on what you do want. And of course, Jesus showed us by example that there's a difference in how that plays out. So think about it for a moment in terms of this idea of resisting evil and what that does and how that grows. So let's just say somebody insults you or does you wrong in some way or another, criticizes you. And right then you decide, I'm going to get them back. And you start thinking about what you can do to retaliate, how you can get your revenge, how you can get even. Pretty soon it starts taking over a lot of your time, a lot of your attention. And you find that not only is it making things worse, but you've lost your center. You've lost your peace. You've lost your integrity. No one is well served. It turns into a lose-lose. Well, happily, we have an alternative, which is to, rather than to resist what we don't want, to let it go, let it be, and focus on what we do want and inject our energy into that, create the new order of things, begin to envision and move towards the harmony that we seek or the peace that we want or the love returned. So think of it this way. If somebody's coming at us and they're angry or they're blaming us or in some way we feel mistreated by them, if we respond in kind, we get this, right? We get a butting of heads, a test of wills. And it really is immobilizing. You're locked in battle. Neither one wants to move. So you're playing their game. But if, on the other hand, when somebody comes at you like this, if you simply remove the resistance, you don't engage in the battle, the aggressor has nothing to push against. And so the aggression just tends to fall away. Have you ever experienced this in your life? It can be as simple as if someone is attacking you to go silent, and you find that pretty soon they run out of things to say because you're not pushing back on them. Well, does this mean that we never take a stand for ourselves or that we never oppose injustice? No, it doesn't. But what it does mean is that when we are in a position where we must take a stand to protect ourselves or to protect others, we do so anchored in our own truth. We do so with our full integrity and that larger perspective of a higher good. We do not do it with any intention to harm, defeat, or in other ways mistreat or abuse someone else. And so we follow through on what we feel led to do, but we do so in our highest, not our lowest, consciousness. So Jesus, even though He did not resist evil in the sense of violent action. He certainly never advocated getting violent in order to overcome evil. But what he did do, and he did it masterfully, is that he would use nonviolence to undermine evil. So not trying to outmuscle it, but rather coming in and undermining it. So how do you undermine evil? So if something is going wrong, if someone is on a destructive path, the way to undermine that is to dismantle their thinking, right? You know, in Unity we say that evil doesn't exist as an external entity on its own. It's not a separate force. There's only one power, one presence, God the good, everywhere present. And so when what appears to be evil arises, it's not a separate force operating in the world, but rather it is our own erroneous thinking. We're being led by a false belief. And typically that belief is that we're separate from one another and that we're separate from God. And so Jesus' ministry was about correcting that error thinking, about leading us back to our oneness with each other, and our oneness with God. And don't you find that when you're in that consciousness, that higher consciousness, that even if you had had a temptation to retaliate against someone or get them back, it's just not there anymore. You know, you just have no interest in that because you're on a higher level of being. And so you just don't go there. You just don't give in to the ego battle. You don't go there in the same way that on that first day of Passover, Jesus and his people, they just didn't go. They physically didn't go where Pontius Pilate was. They stayed where they needed to be to do their work. So how can we learn to not go there? Because heaven knows there are plenty of opportunities during the day. You know this. It's like a lot of hooks out there, you know, where we feel that temptation to lash out or fight back or criticize or whatever it might be, gossip even. We feel that temptation. So how do we not go there? Well, Jesus showed us how. And so did Gandhi and Martin Luther King and other great leaders who knew this deep level of compassion. And what they really were calling for us to have in us the strength to love. The strength to love. A love that comes from the very depths of our soul. It's the kind of love that allows us to forgive when we've been hurt. It's the kind of love that allows us to turn the other cheek, give the other person the benefit of a doubt. It's the strength of a love in refusing to hurt or harm or hate someone else. So I had a lesson in this when I was a wee little girl. I learned this from my mother. I don't even know if she realized that she was teaching me about turn the other cheek or come from the strength of love, but she was. So here's the scene. I was in first grade, and there was a girl every day when I got on the school bus. Her name was Pamela Gibson. It's funny how you don't forget things like this, but anyway. So Pamela, when I would get on the bus, she would make fun of me. And my last name then was Godwin, and she would call me Goblin. And just throw out any sort of insult, you know, ridicule me in any way she could. So it was getting to me. So I went home and I asked my mother what I should do. And I just casually mentioned that Pamela had a sort of a peanut-shaped face. And I said to my mother, could I just call her peanut face and make this even? Well, my mother didn't like that idea. She didn't go there. But instead, what she said is, find something in Pamela to compliment. Well, okay then. So the next day, when I saw her, before she could get anything out, I said, what a pretty dress you're wearing today. And she was stunned. In fact, she didn't say anything that day, and she never teased me again. It was amazing. It was just turning the other cheek. Such a simple example. Learned that as a child. Why is that hard for some adults? Thinking of politicians, but in any case. Staying on track here. But truly, how do we muster that strength to love? What do we need in order to get in that place where, dang, we can just let go of that urge that we have within us to hurt the other person back? Well, Jesus said this so beautifully. He said, behold, I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves. He said, be ye therefore wise as serpent and harmless as doves. So what did he mean by this? Be as wise as serpents. So he's saying we need to be as wise and strong in our minds as possible so that we can consciously respond to whatever is happening before us. In Jesus' case, he showed us how he could be very clever and even outwitting the opposition. But at the same time, as we're using the strength of our mind, we remain tender in our heart. And so we may be very tough-minded, but also tender-hearted. And so we go after whatever the wrong is, whatever the situation is, but we don't hate the person involved in it. We go after the injustice, but not the perpetrator of the injustice. It's this ability to separate the deed from the doer, right? to remember this is a product of your error thinking going on, and I will respond in order to be in my integrity and to tell my truth. But I also can see the other person with compassion. Sometimes this can be hard to do, especially in the moment. And I remember what Martin Luther King said. He said, "There is some good in the worst of us and some evil in the best of us." A humbling reminder that none of us is perfect. I'm sorry to break that to you, but none of us is perfect. And we all have our shadow side and we have our shining side. And he has a quote that I particularly loved that I think perfectly describes what this is like when we're being confronted with somebody who is seeming to be an attacker or our enemy. He says, "When we look beneath the surface, beneath the impulsive evil deed, we see within our enemy, neighbor, a measure of goodness, and know that the viciousness and evilness of his acts are not quite representative of all that he is. We see him in a new light. We recognize that his hate grows out of fear, pride, ignorance, prejudice, and misunderstanding. But in spite of this, we know God's image is ineffably etched in his being." Seeing the divine in someone, even when you disagree with them, even when you're hurt by them. That's a tall order. Now here's an example of someone who did that beautifully. So there was a girl in Johannesburg, and she was getting out of her car one day, and a thug assaulted her. Well, unfortunately for this man, he did not know that she was a judo expert. So when he lurched at her, she just calmly flipped him right over the car, and he landed with a crash in the middle of the road. But listen to what she did next. She got up and she ran around to make sure he was okay. And she helped him up, and then she gave him a few coins to get a meal. That's what we're talking about. That's what we mean by turning the other cheek and seeing the good in someone no matter what is presenting before you. Very, very touching. And we can summon that same strength in us. You know, that girl was as wise as a serpent and as harmless as a dove, was she not? We can do that same thing. Whether we are protecting ourselves, whether we're protecting our nation, we can look at it as this is something that must be addressed. We can think of it almost as an unpleasant task that we have to do. But we can do it without malice, without hate, without contempt for the people involved. You know, we're all on our spiritual path. I don't know about you, but sometimes my spiritual path feels nice and wide. I'm real comfortable. Everything's going great. Other times, staying on that path, it's a little bit tighter. Sometimes it feels like walking on a balance beam. And when things are really, really challenging, it's like walking a tightrope. You ever experienced this? You're trying to keep yourself where you know you want to be and need to be, walking on that rope, heading toward the light, paying attention to your own truth. But it would seem sometimes that all life forces are trying to knock you off. Knock you off balance. So how do we keep our balance in a situation that challenges us? Well, here are a couple of questions we can ask ourselves as we're feeling tempted to retaliate, get revenge, whatever it is. And the first one is, what is my motive? Why do I really want to do this? What am I really trying to prove here? Often we're trying to prove that we're right. Often we're trying to defeat the other person, just for the fun of it. Second, how do I feel inside when I think about doing this? Am I proud of what I'm considering doing? Do I like myself right now? You know, it seems sometimes that we just react automatically, but there is always that little pause when we can mindfully choose how we are reacting or responding, actually. Just ask ourselves, how am I feeling right now? Is this serving me? If it isn't serving you, I can tell you it's certainly not serving the other person. The third thing we can ask is, how can I see this differently? We can ask it of ourselves, or we can pray to Spirit for some guidance on that, realizing that I'm in a bad place with this. This is hurting me. It's not working. Help me see this differently. And the final thing is to ask ourselves, what would I have to let go of in order to do what I know is the right thing to do, in order to do what my heart is telling me to do? May have to just give up the old ego there, give it a rest, not go there. When we do this, we find that we do have within us the wisdom of the serpent and the peacefulness and harmlessness of a dove, and we can pull on that strength of love within us in even the most extreme circumstances. And so for this, my teacher these days, one of my teachers, is our congregant, Sue, who is in jail. And I have asked her before, how do you keep your balance? How do you stay in any semblance of a place of peace when you are in these confined quarters with women with all sorts of mental drug, all sorts of problems and issues, shouting, fighting? And she's told me about her cellmates as they come and go. She told me about one who she was terrified was going to threaten her. But then one day she said, or was going to beat her up, actually. But then one day she said to that woman, "I'm praying for you, and I'll be praying for you on," and then she said the date that that woman was going to court. And the woman began to cry. She said, I can't believe you remembered when the court date is. And then the woman, who was only 22 years old, she said, "My lawyer tells me that I need to stay out of trouble until then." And Sue said, "I have faith that you will." And after that, there was peace between them. So I wrote her a letter and I said, "Tell me about how you turn the other cheek." And I want to share with you what she said because it's relevant on our path as well. She writes, "I never ever jump into any of the girls yelling or calling each other names. Usually within 1 or 2 days, they are friends again. Usually I tell myself to ignore what's going on. Resist not. The books, daily word, and other things you send me help keep me centered. You are coming to visit, my kids coming, my grandchildren, phone calls and letters all help me. I didn't react to things very much until you asked the question. God is with me. All the affirmations sure help me. Many times I do feel at peace. I can't believe I said that, but it's true. What would I do without the teachings of unity? I still cry, I still get upset, but not nearly as much as I used to. Thank you for being my pastor and my very good friend. Love, Sue." What an inspiration she is to me. And knowing that she is able to respond in love encourages me and hopefully all of us to do the same. And when we do that, when we are able to respond in love, even when hate or fear is working in us. As Charles Fillmore says, pulling on the imagery of Palm Sunday, he said, "In the same way that there were the shouting of hosannas and the spreading of the cloaks and the leaves in front of Jesus, when we overcome error thinking, our entire consciousness celebrates. And it sings out to us, Hosanna, blessed are we who come in the name of the Lord." Let's turn now to our meditation. Take a moment to close your eyes, settle into your seat. Let's take a deep breath in and then let go. Releasing in to this now moment, allowing Spirit to soothe us, to love us, to calm us. And to encourage us. Allow whatever cares you are holding in your mind or heart to simply fall away. Release. Release and let go. Truly, in this now moment, all is well. We are here and we are at peace. From this place of calm and centeredness, I invite you to bring to mind any individual or situation that might be causing you angst. Any part of your life where you're feeling struggle or antagonism towards someone or something. And in this moment, allow your heart to soften. Send love and light to this person or situation. And as you do, experience Spirit moving in and through you, bringing you peace. Behold the good in the other, the good in the situation, and let go of all else. Let go. In this sacred moment, allow yourself to be tender-hearted and to feel your connection with others and with all of life, and listen for your own inner guidance in the silence. With grateful hearts, we give thanks for our spiritual journey, for each new day, each new awareness, for the opportunity to love more deeply, both ourselves and others. We forgive ourselves for past errors, error thinking, and we forgive others as well, and we step forward into this new day, affirming peace where there has been conflict, love where there has been hate, and harmony where there has been any misunderstanding. We affirm this, we see it in our mind's eye, and we release it now to Infinite Spirit and know that it is already done in the mind of God, and we simply let it be. And so it is. Amen.